This is Low Moon Outsiders, and the story continues.
Herrick says, I know the city fairly well, as far as getting around, and I have pledged my assistance to you. If you want to buy a magic carpet, the only way to do so in this precinct would be the way that Kevin has mentioned. Most people won't part with them unless they've been stolen, have a little bit of a stigma to them. As far as the precept goes, he will go somewhere else where he feels strong. He will go somewhere else where he can rally support.
Are we strong enough to fight him right now?
We're a little beat up.
Rook says, I don't think so. That death trap with all those people around us. You're just going to be dealing with that again, aren't you? I mean, mm-hmm. We know that he left his silver behind, but he obviously had, he was a fairly wealthy man, so he could hire a bunch of mercenaries. Mm-hmm. What about the woman?
Do we want to deal with him right now or deal with him later?
What about the woman?
I don't think the woman has anything to do with us.
I had the impression that she might be the whole problem.
She was. There was obviously something more going on, but again, what are we going to do about it? I really think the best way to handle this is to just move on. This is one precinct in one city. We're not tied here.
Right.
We're talking about someone with more power in this area of the city than you could possibly know.
In this area?
So exactly.
Other areas might be safer, you're saying?
Yeah, I mean, I'm even just saying, let's leave the precinct. You know, if we, you know, stay here long enough to maybe inquire the guild and then leave, go to a different precinct, if we get wind of a problem, just bounce the city. You know?
It does occur to Astrid that Andrea did tell you, Charlotte's dancer, basically, did tell you that they were moving on from this precinct of the city. Now, the last time you saw her, they weren't going to be in this precinct anymore. And you're fairly certain that she said that they were moving on to the precinct to the west. So deeper in, away from the dock, basically. And that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but yeah. If you're leaving to go somewhere anywhere...
We can't just go to a different precinct and hide out for a day. Well, let's do that, though.
What direction is Lumen? Long way away from you.
Yeah, if you went overland, it's... 800 miles. Jeez. Long ways.
What about overseas?
It's faster overseas. You're, your ship was tacking a lot coming here because the winds were going in the opposite direction, which they can do if they're trying, triangle rigged ships, basically they can run almost against the wind. But on the way back, the, you know, faster ships probably make the journey in a couple days. Running ahead of the wind.
Say if we're going to leave here, we leave by ship.
Maybe that by a boat or steamer.
Or boat passage. My plan was to go to Low Moon. You're telling me with favorable trade winds that someone ain't leaving the city to go to Low Moon?
Oh yeah, should be a ton.
Yeah.
Eric says.
That's a good point.
So... not that I'm particularly keen to trust another captain, but
sailors don't kill this one.
We keep our wits about him and pay him well. We won't have any trouble. It's generally, you know, I haven't done much sea travel myself, but
I think we did enough sea travel.
Yeah, but. Where are we going to go if not to Low Moon? And It's an 800-mile journey.
I know.
Assuming that Charlotte didn't have a message to go back, which apparently she didn't, then you're supposed to go back to the... could go back to the person who hired you. He was going to pay you more money. So you have money coming to you if you go back to Low Moon to get the rest of the payment.
Yeah.
Fairly sizable. So...
I agree we should go to Low Moon. Just hard of getting there.
I really think by sea is the best option. I don't think that booking passage and traveling a couple days is any more dangerous than traveling 3 months over land or whatever. And miles, 20 miles a day, you're talking about at least a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Faster with a flying carpet.
Yeah, faster with a flying carpet. Which is,
but you still got to deal with air predators and dragons and other people who have flying carpets.
You can get closer to Lone Moon, dragons are your real threat. That's because, what, we're coming up from the south?
You're north of Lone Moon now.
Okay.
So you go west, southwest. From here, this is Kazakhstan. So from here, you would go to the capital of the Eastern Lands, which is west, southwest of here. 15, 20 miles. And then from there, you would go west through pretty wild territory and then into the Pomarge, and then through the Pomarge, all the way across the length of the Pomarge.
The Pomarge was south of Low Moon.
No, north. Basically, it's Low Moon, Pomarge, and there's a kind of a mountain range, and this side of the mountain range is the Eastern Lands. Then it goes up like that, and then goes to the Northern Sea, and then that's Geoff has all of this around the Northern Sea, and Endive and points east, which are less civilized.
Well, I mean, travel over sea. They're flying over the Pomarge.
Kevin said, it'd be nice to have a flying carpet even if we're leaving on a boat.
Yeah.
Remember, just have a flying carpet.
Flying over the Pomarge, we gotta worry about dinosaurs. Pterodactyls and such.
Yeah.
Don't want to mess with those things. I don't know, I don't really know anything about pterodactyls, but they don't sound pleasant.
I've seen pictures. Big teeth.
Apparently they're massive.
Huge. Big wingspan.
I can't imagine those things move fast, though.
Oh.
Not as fast as some things. But...
faster than a griffin,
pair. I don't know if it'd be faster. I don't know if it'd be faster than a flying carpet. Flying carpets don't seem like they move all that fast.
Yeah, I don't know what a flying carpet is either.
I think we better just take a boat. Or you just want to buy a... so you're saying you want to buy a carpet.
I think it would be a nice thing to have, is to have a flying carpet.
In this city, taxes are outrageous, so we might be spending another $3,000. How much was it?
There is nowhere in the world, as far as I'm aware, to get a flying carpet cheaper than you're going to get it here.
That is still insane.
Yeah.
We could probably buy it off of...
you're buying it. You're buying it from a fence? You wouldn't pay taxes anyway.
Yeah. Huh? For buying it.
If we buy from a fence, we wouldn't pay taxes anyway.
Mm-hmm. We buy it off of one of Kevin's guild friends. Yeah. Friends.
Rook says we could ask Kaji where to buy a flying carpet.
I don't think Kaji's going to point us to a fence.
I think so. He's been very discreet and helpful.
I suppose that's fair.
The problem is, if somebody's after us and we go back to the guild hall, they may pick us up from there.
Yeah. Guild Hall is in other parts of the city, right?
Yes, but not that we have connection to. We have Kaji there, and we know him, and technically, we probably still have our rooms there.
Okay. What about Kevin's guild? Do we have a place to stay there?
No, no. He says, no, I didn't join the guild. I told him I wasn't going to be in town long enough. That works for a little while. I have a guild that I'm part of back in Diamond Cove. It's a little less formal, but... if you stay in town more than a month, then you really get on your pretty heavy to join, but... especially since I've picked a few pockets.
We won't be here that long.
Alright. Well, we've been here for 2 weeks already.
Let's go buy a carpet.
Okay. Alright, so we'll make some discreet inquiries about buying a magic carpet. That's the plan. Alright.
And then we don't have to worry about the market being open, I guess.
Yeah. Alright, so, through Kaji or through Kevin's underworld contacts to start with?
I say we split up. I'll go talk to Kaji if someone wants to come with me.
I'll go to Kevin's underworld.
I think that if they are to pick us up, then it's best if at least some of us can attempt a rescue.
Well, when I pick us up, I mean begin to follow us again anyway. They're probably not going to do anything at the guild. They're going to attack us in an alleyway, snipe us from above,
yeah,
report us to the law. Anyway, so you want to you and go by yourself or split up as far as like have a couple of people go back to talk to Kaji? Rook is willing.
You can take Herrick with me.
Because
Kevin probably knows where the guild is.
Well, no, he just knows where some contacts are. He's not going to a place.
Yeah.
I'll go with Kevin.
You know pretty safely how to get back to the guild, so you probably need Herrick less than they do. Or get around.
That's probably true. No, they can take Herrick then.
Okay, so then Rook will go with you. And Kevin, Herrick, and Astern will go checking into the underworld, as it were. You want to divide the money pretty evenly in case somebody finds a bargain and can just buy one right then?
Yeah, sure.
So,
2,000 apiece.
Okay.
Plus whatever we have on us. I don't carry much.
So you stand in a dark alley and divide out 2,000 gold apiece?
Yep.
Feeling like apparently money doesn't buy everything.
I also have a magical longsword I might be able to trade. 2,000 gold is more than I've ever seen in my life. Well, other than the 20,000 that we
spent. I was going to say, you've been living high on the hog fairly recently.
Still a little.
For as long as it lasts.
Yeah.
Although it might be about to go into the grist mill for a. Grist of the mill. There we go. For a magic carpet.
Well. Buying a magic carpet is high on the hog.
Yeah, very much so. Do bear in mind that soon some of you may need to train, and that's going to cost a bunch of money.
Okay, so...
I don't know when the last time a Low Moon party...
Interested in giving financially to Low Moon and support the campaign? Text LMGIVE, that's LM Give, to 419-419-0095.
I had enough money to trade and still had abundant what money left over was.
Yeah. Well, usually a Low Moon party is 8 people, not 5.
Well, that's true, too. Also, once you get to a certain level, you don't have to pay for training anymore.
Yeah.
So it amounts to, like, inn food. You have to hang around an inn for a week.
Yeah.
All right. So, Rook and Lucas go back to the Adventurers Guild. It's late, and you don't know for sure if Kaji's still going to be there, because it's pretty late. But, you know, it's around this time that you usually saw him leave to go home or whatever. You arrive out front, the big flat front building, heavy door. There's some scorch marks on the door near the handle that weren't there most of the time that you were staying here. In the back, you can see the lights on.
Is that from the dog?
Probably. In the back, you can see the lights on, and you hear voices and so on. But you can tell, even as you approach the front door, that the light is off in the lobby, in the area where Kaji normally sits. Roll a d20. Points as you reaching the front door, maybe 10, 15 feet away or whatever, and you're already getting that feeling that he's not there. And Rook taps you on the shoulder and says, "Hey, look." He points down the street. In the dark, probably 60 yards away, you see a fellow walking down the street, keeping to one side in customary merchant garb, and he actually has a hood on covering his head. And based on the clothing you saw him wear, or whatever, you think it might be Kaji.
Okay, I'll try to wave him down, see if he's looking.
No, he's going. Yeah, he's walking away, going down the street. So you're behind him.
How far did you say he was?
60 yards.
So would calling out to him be customarily incorrect?
Well, it wouldn't be a problem normally, but if you're trying to be discreet, be yelling at somebody in the street. Nobody yells at anybody in the street if they can help it.
Yeah. Okay. I'll just walk after him then. Try to keep a pace faster than him to even catch up to him.
Okay.
At least get closer.
Right, so you're walking a stiff pace to catch up to him. You're walking a little faster than he is, closing the distance. He goes another 50 yards or so and then turns right. So he's out of view for that short time. When he turns right at the corner, you're about 45 or so yards behind him.
Okay.
Brooke says, "I can jog on ahead if you want."
Go for it. See if you can catch up to him.
Okay.
I'll just keep walking, not trying to make a scene.
Right. Not a lot of people on the streets, but there's an occasional person standing in the shadows. You pass some couple of, like, what might be ladies of the night, dressed in somewhat skimpy clothes and dresses that push the bust up and hair that's braided and makeup that's applied and like that. And they don't say anything, they don't call out to you, but they do kind of like stop talking to each other and move out toward the edge of the street a little bit, and then when the two of you pass, they just fade back into the shadows and continue talking to each other. Anyway, and then when you're at about 25 yards from the corner, Rook jogs around the corner, and then you go to the corner. You've lost sight of him for that short time. It's maybe 20 seconds, 30 seconds. And then when you get to the corner, you look down the street. It's probably 100 yards away. And you're looking past a light that's on the right-hand side. There's a house that has, or some kind of 2-3-story building that has a number of windows and quite a bit of light shining out the front of it. But looking past it on the street, you can see two men, one of which you think is Rook, one of which you think is Kaji, and they're talking, and they're kind of close together, so obviously talking to each other, maybe about something important. And then you're still briskly walking along. You pass the lighted area. When you get in the lighted area, the light is bright enough that you can't see into the shadowed area where the two of them are standing. You've lost sight of them again. And then as you step out of the light area and put the light behind you, and you, whether you're on infravision or regular vision, either way, you can see far enough to see the corner. And you may roll for surprise. You're not surprised as you see the corner, you see what must be Kaji and Rook standing there, and they just conclude their conversation and start towards you. But just as they start towards you, coming from a side street on the right, comes a small pack of city guard, four of them. And they basically jog around the corner like they're in a hurry. They're in chainmail armor, so they're not jogging real fast, but they're jogging. And they jog around the corner, and all of a sudden they're like right on top of you, and What do you do?
I just step off to the side, sort of put my hands up.
Okay, so you quickly step to the side. I'll just make a dex check. Straight up. Made it. Okay. You quickly step to the side. One of the guys has to divert his course just a fraction, maybe 2 degrees, just enough to get maybe... In fact, his cloak probably brushes your cloak. It's that close. And then they jog in the direction that you came from. So back toward the corner, which possibly leads in the direction of the Adventurer's Guild. But, anyway, and then they ignore you at that point, and you're able to walk on a meet up with Rook and Kaji. Okay, and by that time they had also started heading back towards you, right? And Rook says, "Everything okay?"
"Yeah, I don't know what those guys are on about." Headed back in the direction of the Adventurer's Guild, it looks like.
Maybe. And he says, "I explained to Kaji what we were interested in. He said he might know somebody. Master Lucas, it's good to see you."
"You too, Kaji."
"I was going home for the night. My lady will be put out. I am late. Perhaps the two of you would join me for a late dinner, and then we could go from there."
"Seems all right. I don't have anything against that. I know the others are off on their own business, but I don't know what the plan was to meet up exactly. We didn't really cover that."
"Well, very well then. Follow me, and I'll take you to dinner."
"All right."
As you walk, he begins to tell you about his wife and children. His wife's name is Wambulia, and she's his age. In fact, he knew her since he was a child, but didn't find out that their marriage had been arranged until he was 12. And then they were married when he was 17 or so, and she was 15. And... they have 4 children, 3 girls and 1 boy, and a 5th on the way, but she's only just found out she's pregnant, so she's not really showing yet. And they have a pet cat that roams the house and thinks of it as its own. And anyway, about that time you're showing up out front of his house. There is a window in the front of the house. It's onion paper, so it's not glass. And there's a golden hue coming out of it. So there's obviously a lantern lit not far behind it. And you, Rook, and Kaji head toward the front door. Okay. Meanwhile, elsewhere in Kazakhstan.
Yep.
Okay. Astrid, Kevin, and Herrick make their way across the city. And at a certain point, Kevin points out an alleyway, and the three of you duck into it. And he says, "Okay, right around here, just 2 buildings down, there's some ladies who basically operate a brothel. And one of the ladies there, her name is Ava, and she's the contact that I met from the guild that approached me about joining, so I thought I would just go talk to her and see what she can tell me." He says, I don't expect it will go sour. Do you guys just want to wait here?" Herrick says, "I would prefer to be a little closer if anything went wrong." He sticks his head out on the street and looks down toward... It's all shadows, basically. There's no lights on the street. Mm-hmm. Just faint lights coming from windows here and there. He says, "Maybe we could get on the rooftop across the way." "Maybe, but that's where I would expect a thief, guard, or rogue, whatever to be, somebody up there." Mm-hmm. There's an awning across the side. It's shadowy under there. We could go under there and just stand back from there. We might be able to see you. Whatever you want to do is fine. I anticipate I won't be talking to her for more than a couple minutes. Herrick looks at you. What do you think? So basically you've got a shadowy street, very mm-hmm. little light coming onto the street, but two buildings essentially down is the brothel where he's going to go. Mm-hmm. And he knows she's there. He doesn't know if there are other rogues for sure in the area or not, or how close this is to the actual guild building, if there is a building, mm-hmm. or whatever. And Herrick is saying, be better if the two of you could support him somehow in case something went wrong than just hiding out here in an alleyway.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
Probably do that. So... It's like two buildings down. The brothel is where the
contact is.
Contact is.
Herrick says we could go back up the street a ways, get on a rooftop there. It puts you kind of far out of range if you had to shoot, but it wouldn't be out of range. It'd just be kind of far shots.
Yeah. I'm thinking about this. You can. Have Herrick go inside with Kevin in case something goes on inside, and I'll stay outside.
Okay. Get in position.
Yeah, I'll find a spot that I can see, but I don't have a way of letting anybody know if there's trouble out here, unless I just kill the suspicious one right off the bat.
Well, you'll be alone, but if you're up on a roof and in the shadows, should be safe, theoretically. Especially if you go like maybe four or five buildings back up the street to get on a rooftop, then
is there a way I can let them know if something's going to go down?
Like let them know that like somebody's coming in behind them or something, that kind of thing, or let them know
something
that you're
like
in trouble.
Or? Like there's guards rushing the brothel or something like that.
Mm.
Or guards coming this way.
I can't think of anything other than maybe shooting an arrow.
Through the window?
For example.
Just hoping I don't hit.
Well, you'd want to try not to hit something.
Well, yeah.
You just shoot the door or shoot somewhere when you have a clear shot.
Something. I can shoot a couple out. So, I mean, if I need to, I can shoot somebody coming to threaten us.
You should be able to. You should be able to shoot the door or the window with relative ease without having any risk of hitting anybody, because you could just do it as a cold shot.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you missed what you were actually aiming for, then you wouldn't hit somebody. The only way you would is if somebody like intentionally or unintentionally stepped in the way of what you were aiming at.
It's going to be kind of loud, so. And then shooting the door would be kind of loud.
Yeah, I would definitely make a thunk noise at least.
I can do that, yeah. So I'm going to go perch myself on top of one of these buildings, and I'll shoot the door if anything comes.
Okay. Probably should have clarified. Where's the dog? Who's got the dog? Probably you, right?
Lucas shows the dog. The dog we...
Arter?
Yes.
The dog?
What about it?
You should have the dog.
Do you have the dog with you, or does the Sturt have the dog with him?
I can have the dog.
Okay. All right.
The point of the dog is to protect Rook.
Okay.
That's why we got the dog.
Rook is the dog. Protected by the dog. I got it. Okay. That will take some of the pressure off of other people. Alright. Okay, so Rook and Asturd have the dog. Alright. Kaji's a little creeped out by the dog, but...
Lucas. Rook and Lucas.
That's what I meant. Sorry, Rook and Lucas.
Wait.
Yeah, and... he'll have to remember you have to do something about the dog because they have a cat. Okay. So, they give you time to go back up the street a few buildings, and you find an easy rain spout to climb up and just roll a straight dex check. Roll a d20, straight dex check.
17.
No problem. Remember, I also roll. So you shimmy up the pipe with relative ease. It does give way a little bit at about two-thirds up, so it strikes you that it might be a good idea to come down a different way. Mm-hmm. Because it's starting to, one of the plates, it's a ceramic tile pipe. One of the plates was cracked, and when you put your hand there to go up to the next section, it pulled away from the wall. So they're about 2 foot sections. So
while I'm on the roof, I'm going to scout the area and see if there's any.
Okay. So you arrive on a flat roof. Mm-hmm. The building has a false front. It's a cool night now, so the temperature is down around 50 degrees.
False front.
Yeah, so like the roof is flat like this, but then the building, the front of it goes up like 6 feet, making it look taller than it actually is. And there's a low-lying wall all around the rest of it that's about 2 foot tall.
Mm-hmm. Is there any like shorter buildings around the?
Yeah, so the building in the direction away from where they went, so further away from their contact point, basically, is shorter than this one, maybe like 3 feet.
Okay. So I should be able to jump down there and find a way down that way.
Yeah. So there is a little alley between them, but it's only about 5 feet, and it'd be down, so it's a pretty easy jump. Mm-hmm. There is also a rain spout on the back corner of this building, and then the building that is in the direction of the contact is the same height as this one, mm-hmm. and the alleyway is about 8 feet, which is also doable with a running jump. So, although it would depend on how heavily equipped you are, I suppose. Maybe a little less. It might be a little harder.
I was holding my
around 5 foot something.
5 foot 1. Yeah. I think I'll be able to do
that. Anyway, so looking in the direction where they were in the alleyway, you see them walk out of the alleyway. So from here, if you stand next to the false wall, you have the false wall on your right. Mm-hmm. So there's a wall that's a little taller than your head. But then when you look in the direction of the where they're going, it's six buildings down on the right-hand side, and you actually can see it's a two-story building, and in the upstairs window, there's light coming out of just about every orifice, but it's not very bright. Mm-hmm. So you think it's probably candlelight more than lantern light. Mm-hmm. But anyway, you can see one of the windows in the upstairs, the closer upstairs window, is open. There's no onion paper or glass or anything like that. It's an open window. And there's a curtain that's dangling out the window, and it's sort of blowing around in the wind. And then you see a woman leaning out the window, and she's looking back and forth up and down the street. She's wearing a kind of busty dress, has her hair, just blonde hair, and it's mostly up on top of her head, but then there's about a 3-inch ponytail that comes down from the left side of her head down, and then she does have a veil that isn't covering her hair very well. It's that kind of veil, like it should cover hair, but it's not really doing a very good job. She's probably intentionally not covering her hair. You know that you've seen enough now to know that most of the women in this culture do cover their hair. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the men wear turbans or something like that. But most of the women do cover their hair, but the ladies of the night, as it were, not as much. Mm-hmm. So the hair is generally considered to be attractive, and so when it's a little flirtatious to not cover their hair. So anyway, so she's scanning up and down the street. That puts her about maybe just a few feet below your level. Mm-hmm. So, but she's 6-7 buildings away, and she's not looking up or level across the rooftop. She's looking down. And if she did look up at you, you would be mostly concealed by the short wall that's in front of you. But she could somehow see, never mind, she's a little bit lit there too. She could somehow see into the darkness or whatever. She could spot you. So if you made quick movements or something like that, she might see you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway, you're in position, and you see them walking up to the front of the house. All right. They're met there by somebody standing in the doorway. You can only just see part of his shoulder. Think it's a guy in armor, probably leather. Also in that time, ranging the front of the house, the front of the house for you would be considered to be in medium range, okay. Which means you'd be at a -2 to hit. But you could see it very clearly, and you know, you could easily call shot or pick what you're trying to shoot at. Okay. Anyway, so the two of them, Herrick kind of hanging back a little bit, talk briefly to the guard. They then wait around a little bit. As they both back away from the door and wait around, you can tell, seems like they might be saying something to each other, but you can't tell what it was. Can't see anything, can't read their lips, their faces are in shadow. You notice that Kevin looks around and actually kind of scans the rooftop to see if he can spot where you are. He's not overly obvious about it, but if somebody were watching him, they might realize he's looking for something. And you think, well, that's completely tactless, but can't do anything about it right now, except maybe shoot him, which would kind of give away your position. So, anyway, so he stands there, he looks around, and you're not sure, but the way he behaves, you don't think he spotted you. Like, he doesn't know exactly where you're at.
Okay.
And then that lasts for about a minute, and then the big guy comes back to the door. Well, at least you assume he's a big guy, because you could clearly see part of his shoulder over top of Herrick's shoulder. And then the two of them step into the house.
Check out Amal Dan Inc. for incredible opportunities to support the ministry.
So they're out of view. Okay. Are you during this time? Like, do you have an arrow notched, and are you ready to shoot?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Roll a d20. Okay. What is your wisdom? What is Astrid's wisdom?
13.
Roll a d8. 8. Oh, you have a d8 out. All these dice are d8s. How common it is to reach for a dice and not have the only one you want out of three dice. Alright, so you're watching, no sign of trouble. You do see some other people moving up and down the street. In fact, you see two guardsmen on a crossing street, maybe past where they're at by several buildings. And they walk across, but they just keep going. A cart rolls by in the street. A single man driving it, hunched over. From the looks of him, he might be sleeping. He's completely hunched over and doesn't lift his head as he drives by the brothel. And you faintly, although you can't hear exactly what she says, you hear the woman on the second floor call out to him as he drives the cart by. And as he's approaching, the tone of her call seems to be maybe joking or trying to lure him. Or whatever, and then as he's passing by, the tone changes to be kind of like, sounds almost caustic, maybe insulting.
Yeah.
And then he continues by and he goes by in front of the building that you're on the building, you can't see his face or his hands or anything. His hood is up over his head and he's hunched down, dull brown color. The cart has mostly straw in it. You can see bits of straw sticking out all over. Mm-hmm. No, if there's anything else in there or not. But he's got a horse pulling a two-wheel cart full of at least two-thirds of straw. And then once he goes past that 6-foot front, The only way you'd be able to see him would be to go down to look in like one of the holes, because there's holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, it goes on by. And they've been in the building now for a solid minute or so.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Roll a d20.
10.
Okay. Kind of staying focused on the scene below in case there's trouble. No one's approaching the building. Seems pretty calm. A man and a woman do come out, and they're very much engaged in a flirtatious embrace. And he actually presses her against one of the posts in front of the building, and they're having a passionate kiss. She's scantily clad. Her dress is only partly on. It's definitely a commercial for the kind of business that they do.
Mm-hmm.
It's not anything overly risque, but her dress is partly, you know, dripping down. Her hair is completely unfurled, no covering. He's probably in his late teens, early 20s, fairly physical. Could be a sailor, you think. I mean, he's got kind of that wiry, masculine physique of a young sailor. You notice he has a lengthy tattoo of some kind on his right arm, below his elbow, in the back of his forearm. So he's facing it kind of in your direction, and she's facing away. And so as he has his arm up, and there's enough candlelight, you can see is some kind of lengthy tattoo right here. Something catches out of the corner of your eye, peripheral vision to your left, so out across the rooftops. Mm-hmm. And you can't see onto all of the roofs because some of the buildings are taller than the one that you're on, but majority of them are smaller. And you see two individuals, and they're much closer than you might be comfortable with as far as them potentially spotting you. Obviously, you're staying in a shadow, that kind of thing. It is still raining lightly, just like mist at this point. But you see a slender form at about 5 foot tall going from rooftop to rooftop. And then you see a second form chasing, it would appear, or at least running after the first one. And they've now moved to be two buildings away from you.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they take the most logical jump, they would jump onto the building that's directly across from you. And then the next jump, if they continue on their current course, would put them on the building that you're on. Now, that doesn't mean they would see you, because you are in the shadows, that kind of thing. But you can see that that's their course. You didn't spot them until now.
Hmm.
So two buildings away, coming pretty fast. What do you do?
I'm assuming I can. You said it's like 3 foot tall.
Yeah, it's a 3 foot wall.
3 foot wall.
So if you were down behind it, you probably wouldn't be seen.
Are they chasing each other like playfully, or is this just like
roll a d20.
6.
Okay, she seems to be. The tone, like her posture, like that, she seems to be afraid or possibly in a great hurry, like there's a reason to run. Could be because he's chasing her, could be because they're both trying to get away or something. And then as he is running after her and you look at him, now mind you, by this time they're now one building away, but as you look at him, you now realize that he has a weapon in hand. Looks like a short sword, and check out Things Were Different Back Then, the origin story of Lord Victor told from a certain point of view. So it's drawn as he's running. He's also lightly clad like she is. You can now see him better. He's probably 6 foot tall. He's wrapped almost completely, including his face. So you can't really see like skin tone or anything like that, but it does look like a man. The shape of him, you would say he is a man.
Mm-hmm.
He is unarmored, as far as you can tell, but he's armed, obviously, with a short sword. And when they both make the jump to the building that's next to you, as she goes to make the jump, she slows up for a second, and then maybe, I think probably to time her footing, and then she charges, she jumps, steps on the edge, and then jumps across to the building that's the one building that's right next to the one that you're on. And then when she does that, just as she jumps, he is almost right behind her, and he definitely raised the sword as if it was into an attacking position, but then she jumped, and so she was well out of his reach, so kind of just like he had a very, oh, here's my chance, but there was really not really a chance. And then he turns, retreats back a few steps.
They're headed toward my building, right?
Correct. Okay. Let me give you a quick sketch just to make sure we're picturing the same thing. So basically, the buildings are lined up like this. Okay. This is the building you're on with the tall front. You're right here. Okay. The brothel is down here. Okay, this is where the contact is being made. Then there's another building that runs right here. And it's probably a little longer. And, you know, there'd be another one, whatever. Anyway, they've been crossing. And you're not, you don't know, because you didn't spot them until they left onto this building. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, much closer than you would have liked, probably, to see, you would have liked to catch them sooner than that. Anyway, so that, and now they've leapt onto this building. And I'll even give you that, you know, they kind of come from this area to this area. So that actually, you're right here. So they're definitely closing their distance toward you. When she leapt from here to here, he got up close behind her for a second, at, just as she leapt. And it looked like he might have tried to hit her with a sword if he could. Then he turns and goes back, takes a few steps back, and then runs and jumps onto the building that she's on. By that time, she's already crossing to here.
So, I can judge their, I don't have to judge their path. She's about to jump.
Yeah, so she's going to jump over to here.
So I'm going to lay.
The building you're on. You're right there.
I'm going to lay down on my side right there and then kind of wait for the dude to get up there, and then I'm going to cold shot him.
Okay. So in order to call shot, you have to be aiming at him for some time, like tracking on him. You might be able to pull it off between here and here, but they're running pretty fast.
Well, I'm not going to call shot him. I'm just going to try to shoot.
You could sit down, like you go down to like one knee, so you'd be almost completely covered, mm-hmm. and just aim across that way. I mean, so it would only be like your shoulder and your head would be the only thing that's above this. And he's probably focused on the girl more than on you anyway.
Do I still be able to call shot him?
Yeah, and then you'd track him from here to here, and you'd have all the way to the other side before, and probably even to here if need be, before you lose tracking on him.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the way call shot works is you have the arrow drawn and you're aiming, and when you feel confident that you're going to hit what you're shooting at, that's when you let fly. So it's an initiative roll, and then let's say you roll initiative 4. So if we're in it, if they're getting ready to do, if he's here in initiative 9, then jumps to here in 8, 7, 6, 5, jumps here 4, and then you might shoot him in the air, or 4 might be here, or 4 might be here, depending on, it's when you feel 100% sure that your shot's going to land where you think it is. It's basically how call shot works. So there's no, you know, like this, it's, yeah. Okay, here we go, there, you know, that kind of thing. But that guarantees that you don't miss and hit somebody else, and it also you get to pick where you want to hit him at.
Yeah, so then I'll call shot him.
Okay, so you're on down on one knee, you're aiming at him, and then where are you going to try to shoot him? Head, chest, leg, hand. If he doesn't die, he may cry out, which could potentially give your position away. You
Probably go first.
I guess you could shoot him in the neck. That would stop him from crying out, probably. All
right. I mean, be crying out for help. Yeah, I'd shoot him somewhere in the head or neck area.
Okay. But if you shoot him in the head and you hit, then you get a percentage dice roll to kill him instantly. And even if you fail, you still do times 3 damage, which your point blank range will actually be times 5 damage. Or 4 damage.
Okay.
Yeah, times 4 damage. Okay. So, you're tracking on him. Roll your initiative roll.
D8, right?
D6. And add your dex bonus if you get one, which I can't remember if you do or not.
Dex bonus. I don't know. If I get one.
What's your dex?
16?
Yes, plus 1.
Okay. 3.
Okay, so 3 total?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in 6, he leaps from the building that he was on to the building next to you. So mm-hmm. he's now one building away. At that point, you're already tracking on him.
Mm-hmm.
Then in 4, she tries to leap from the building that she's on to the building that you're on, which she does beautifully. She doesn't really even slow down. Like, she had to slow down with the previous one, but this one she didn't really even slow down. She just ran and jumped. And it is not. It's an 8-foot jump, and the two are even, pretty much. So, okay? And so then he's crossing the next building in 5. So in 4, he's just arriving at the edge, but he's still on the next building.
Mm-hmm.
And so then in 3, if it goes really well, which is going pretty well, he's actually jumping across from the next building onto your building. So now you can fire in 3, which means you have the shot. You'd actually be hitting him basically while he's in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Or, which could be have a double advantage, because if you hit him and don't kill him, It should disrupt his jump, in which case he'll fall in the alley and potentially die from the fall. So that would be kind of a nice addition. But, or you could wait until he lands on this building to actually fire.
I'll shoot him there.
Okay. So you need to roll a d20 to hit. High number, obviously. You're shooting him in the head.
8.
Okay. All right. So, figure it out, because his AC for his head is pretty crappy. So, you're second level, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's 19. Point blank brings your Thaco down to 17. Dex bonus is plus 1, so that makes it 16. And then you get minus what for your call shot? Is it minus 8? You have call shot minus 8? Is that what you have?
Yes, minus 8. Okay.
Okay. So then that puts you back to 24 for AC 0.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's AC. Okay, so. Alright, that means you missed. Just barely. Okay? So the shot careens across right next to his head. It misses by an inch, basically. He lands on your building. No, you don't know whether you even noticed that you fired at him. Okay, and then she is crossing the building that you're on. You notice that she glances in your direction,
mm-hmm.
which means she probably heard the sound of your bowstring, or something caused her to look that way as she's running. But she continues to run and jump onto the next, or try to jump onto the next building. He tries to stick the landing on the building that you're on, and he does. He does not look immediately in your direction, like doesn't turn toward you or anything like that. He still has his eye on the prize, as it were. And so then he is moving across, right? And then that brings us to the end of the round. So he's on your building at the end of the round, right? So now as we start the new round, you have the option of either firing a missile fire, which would be 2 shots at point-blank range, or trying to call a shot again. If you try to call a shot again, as long as he doesn't like turn and charge at you or whatever, then or get completely out of range or out of view by the time you fire, then it shouldn't be a problem. Mm-hmm. If you try to fire at him just two shots, then you'll definitely get those two shots off because missile fire would come first before he can get very far at all.
Yeah, so I'll take two shots.
Okay, but it won't be that instant kill type thing. Okay? Alright, so roll your missile fire initiative.
So five.
Okay. So he is on your building, headed for the rail. She is leaping to the next building. She does not slow down, so he will not get to attack her on this building, even if you miss. Mm-hmm. You can tell she's going to clear to the next building. He's closed the distance some, but not enough to be able to get her before she gets to the next building. Okay? And then we go to missile fire. So you get two shots on him.
Is this 2d20s?
Yep, 2d20s.
From 17 to 10.
Okay, 17 is definitely a hit. 10 is going to be close. You don't have the minus 8 now for called shots, so I think you hit him. Yes, you definitely hit him. Yep, so both hit. So roll a d6.
Cool.
So d6 for each one. And then plus 2 for each one, and then times 2 total. So it's 2d6 plus 4 times 2 is your damage.
Same color. You said 2d6 plus what?
4. So plus what did four. You roll?
So I got 6.
Plus 4 is 10.
No, I mean, I got 2 2s, so.
So that's 4. So that's 8. And then times 2. So 16.
Okay.
Okay? So yeah, you hit him twice. The one basically clips him midsection, probably just above the hip, kidney kind of area, but it doesn't stick. It's obviously loose in his clothing. The other one, very nearly sticks in his thigh, grazes very deeply the front of his left thigh. Mm-hmm. Now, even as he's about to jump, so he goes to jump. Don't know whether he's unconscious or conscious. You don't know. I mean, you obviously hit him twice with your bow. And when he jumps way short. And he, like his upper body between his pecs and his neck, impacts the opposite building edge of the wall. Mm-hmm. And so then his head comes down on the top of the wall. And then he flips backwards off the wall and falls into the alleyway. The sum total of which is pretty quiet. I mean, the biggest noises of the whole thing probably were the bowstring going boom. So, but he obviously definitely suffered badly. You still don't know if he's unconscious or dead necessarily, but you know that he suffered badly because he took the two shots from the bow, plus he hit that wall in a very awkward way, could have broke his neck, and went down to the ground. So. All right, so what do you do?
I'm going to continue looking at... Actually, I'm going to go, like, look and see if I can see the guy on the ground.
Okay, so you stalk over to that side, basically.
Yeah. Okay. Just to make sure.
Roll a d6.
6.
Okay. Are you staying basically low as you go, so you're less likely to be spotted from a distance? All right. So you jog over there, staying low, moving fairly quietly. You don't think you're making a lot of noise. And then as you arrive at the edge of the building, you have to, like, lean up over the wall a little bit to look down into the alley.
Mm-hmm.
And you see him below, laying in the alley, and he's actually... basically bent like a rag doll. He felt when he fell back, he hit basically on the back of his head and neck on the ground, and his body is upside down, so he's basically standing on his head, but his head is cocked at a weird angle against the building that you're on. So he hit the building, fell back, landed on his head and neck, and flipped upside down against the building that you're on.
So he's definitely dead.
Almost for sure. His neck is definitely bent at a very odd angle. Okay, roll a d8. Okay. So as you go to pull back away from the wall, the woman reappears on the opposite side, and she leaps from the building across the way and basically kind of like leaps on top of you or into your arms, sort of. But you're surprised, so you don't really react as like in a combat way. So she bears you down to the ground, and at least for the first 30 seconds or so, long enough to understand what she's doing. She's sitting on your chest and has a knife near your throat, not in position to slice your throat, but near your throat, like she has her hands on your shoulders and the knife is in her hand. And you're aware of all that. You saw it, but mm-hmm. you just were so surprised that she even came back and so quickly that she's on you before you know what to do. She's wearing a veil that covers her forehead and most of her nose, but it looks like it was supposed to cover her lower jaw and stuff too, but it slipped down below her neck, probably during her run. And you can tell, even by what you see, that she's fair-skinned and probably quite beautiful. Strong jawline, kind of olive-skinned, or well-tanned or something. I mean, it's not very bright out here. She's probably 5 foot and maybe can't be more than 110 pounds. She's slender. Anyway, she's basically sitting on your chest. Okay? And then she says, in common, she says, "I didn't ask for your help." Sorry for the cough. Biting off the end of this cold. She says, "Who do you work for?"
And me.
She now has... You feel the blade actually sitting against your neck now, but it's not the sharp part of the blade. It's the flat of the blade.
So I work for me.
What is your name?
Astern.
She puts her left hand like on your face, and you realize it's very dark. You can see a little bit of detail of her, but she probably can't see anything on you because you're down below the light level.
Mm-hmm.
But the rain continues to fall on your face. It's welling up in your eye, that kind of thing. And but she puts her hand on your face, like your forehead, like this. And she says, "I owe you. Friends?"
"Don't mention."
She...
"You don't owe me anything."
She crawls off you to the side, and then she's kneeling next to you. And, you know, as you kind of scoot back a little bit, you can get a better look at her, whatever. I mean, she's probably, not knowing what's behind the veils, whatever, she's probably in her mid to late teens. And you can see that she has a little bit of hair coming out from underneath her veil, so she must have long hair. You know, she kneels, kind of sits on her heels, basically, on the roof next to you, which has got gravel on it. There's actual stones on the roof. Mm-hmm. And she has the knife in her right hand, and she has it on her right thigh, so she's holding it against her thigh. And then her left hand is on her left thigh, and she seems to be just breathing. And she's just taking deep breaths.
"Are you okay?" "I'm going to look over and see, like, check the doorway where the two walked in real quick."
From back here, you can't see it. You have to at least get up. Stand up here, and you could probably see it, or otherwise go over there.
I'm going to ask her if she's okay.
"Yes. Thanks to you."
"Are you going to be all right?" like going out on your own?
She looks at you with kind of a look of disbelief. You can see it in her eyes and the little bit of her face that you can see.
I'm not trying to be rude, but I got a thing I got to do over here real quick.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm going to go over there.
Okay.
Check the door because I haven't looked at it for a second.
Okay. As you walk over there, you realize that there's a little bit of pain in your lower back. Mm-hmm. That you, from the adrenaline of the moment or whatever, where she knocked you down, you didn't really realize it, but something, a rock or something, must have hit you in your lower back, like right by where your kidney area is, and you did take 2 points of damage.
Oh, my hit points are really low. I didn't realize that.
Well, you weren't anticipating a brawl on the roof either.
Right.
Okay. Anyway. You arrive back over there, and when you walk up and stand, you see that there are two guardsmen standing with their back to you, and they are talking to the fellow that must have been the guy that let them in. But you can now see him pretty clearly. Mm-hmm. He's bald, dark skinned, mustache and beard neatly trimmed. Has leather-studded armor, cloak. He's standing in the doorway. The door is open. The guardsmen are standing down in the street. The one guardsman has his 1 foot up onto the porch. The man and the woman who were sort of frolicking before are gone. The woman in the window is gone. So you don't see anybody else outside other than the two guardsmen, and they're talking to the guy in the doorway. Mm-hmm. Roll a d20. Okay. Can't make out what they're saying. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, they're standing like 8 feet apart talking, so obviously their voices raised. But there's this constant droning of the rain, so that's making it hard to. Normally, like when you're in the woods, even in the rain, you can pick out sounds, but it's different here because of the gravel and the stone and the it's not the grass and the trees. Like, the trees make a dull sort of thwapping noise that you've learned to almost ignore when you're hunting. But the rain on the rooftops makes this kind of static crackling noise that's like more instead of the thwap, thwap, thwap that the rain makes on the trees, this makes more of a sound, and it's You're beginning to despise hunting in the city, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. It's just not really... It has built-in failure, basically. So you can't make out what they're saying. And then you notice that the guy, the big guy in the doorway, steps outside. He steps to the right. He's still under the awning. And he produces a pipe from his pocket, mm-hmm. puts it in his mouth. And then a bit of flame comes from his right hip, and he begins to light the pipe and puff on it. Meanwhile, the guardsmen look at each other like they're not sure, a moment of uncertainty or whatever, and then they head for the door, which you now realize he has left open.
Hmm. I look back at the girl and say, good luck, and I'm going to start leaping buildings just to get closer.
Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. You too can make the world a better place.
Oh, James. Can someone let me in? Arden, go let James in.
Yeah,
I would assume so. Oh, yeah, there's a vehicle. I didn't even see him pull up. Okay, I'm sorry, what are you doing?
Start hopping towards closer to the door. There's really not much I can do if they're already heading in. Can I shoot one of them?
You're certainly in range. It's a question of whether you want to cause it. If it isn't an incident, do you want to cause it? But you know that Kevin and Herrick are inside the building. And the guardsmen are going in. Do you have bureaucracy or any of those other kinds of non-weapons? What non-weapons do you have? I know you have dance.
Dance.
Is that the only one?
Yes.
Okay.
Dancing, hunting, and rope.
Okay. Well, so, while those skills are useful, they did not tell you for sure anything about this circumstance.
So was that window of the building that they were in?
Yes.
The open one?
Yep.
Can I leap to that window?
No, probably not. Even if you got to the building across the street from it, it'd still be like easily a 20-foot leap. So pretty unlikely you can get in the building from there. You could go down, cross the street, go up, go over to the building that they're in, and then go down into the window, but it would take several minutes at least.
Do I see any other openings?
There are two windows on the top floor. That one's open. The other one, it's probably open, but the reason this one caught your eye so much is the fact that there was a curtain blowing out of it. Then there's the front door, and there is a window in the front of the building to the right of the door. And it's an onion paper window, so that you know, if there's a yellow glow coming from it, and if somebody was standing behind it, you could see a silhouette. Kind of thing, but you can't see through it. It's semi-translucent, definitely not transparent. I figure there's a back door somewhere.
Just have to find a way in that's not the front door.
Yeah. I assume in any case, you're moving or doing something else, not shooting the guards then?
Yeah.
Because you only had maybe a 20-second window to start shooting or otherwise.
Yeah.
Bear in mind, if you started shooting at them, if you hit them, they may die. If you don't hit them, they're definitely going to be distracted long enough, you know, like if your friends are inside, that your friends could get away or, you know that there's a problem. Mm-hmm. There's no way they're going to come over here and get on this roof very fast.
So if I did shoot at them, they'd be more like looking at me, and then they try to come after me.
Probably, yeah.
Both of them. So it's probably better that I did shoot at them.
As long as you're willing to kill guardsmen.
I'm not willing to kill them, but I'm willing to distract them.
Okay. All right. So you could call shot somewhere that's not a
vital
place. I'll shoot one of them in the hand or the foot.
See if I can pin his foot through the ground.
That's assumed. And now, bearing in mind that assumes you can get the shot off, because it'll probably be the back one of the two, which would go through the door last, and he probably would be through the door in 30 to 40 seconds. So it would depend to a degree on your initiative roll.
Alternatively, you could just shoot somewhere near him and see if that will draw his attention.
Well, I'm not really a good shot anyway, so.
Okay. What do
you want to
do?
I'm going to cold shot his thigh or something, the back one's thigh or leg.
You better go lower than thigh, because thigh will kill you.
Thigh?
Yeah. You better at least do calf or, you know.
Yeah, you don't want to accidentally hit, like, one of those big arteries.
Yeah, there's big arteries in there.
An arrow in the knee.
Okay. Roll initiative. Roll the d6 and add one. Okay. Neither one of them is moving all that fast. Oh, nice. Okay. So, actually, you can pick your choice. Do you want to shoot the guy in the front or the guy in the back? If you shoot the guy in the front, you know they'll both notice.
Exactly. So I'll shoot the guy in the front.
If you were trying to pick them off, shooting the guy in the back would be better, because the front guy might not notice.
Yeah.
You could shoot him next.
Shooting turkey.
Okay, shoot him and then find a way to avoid them. I'm going to shoot the guy in the front.
Okay, roll a d20. You've picked an unarmored spot again, so that's good.
5.
That's a crappy roll. Good at that. Okay. Let's see here. Rolling for scatter. All right. So it does. It actually goes past him. So it would have hit him in the calf, but it misses, and it hits the porch in front of him, tears up some wood splinters, and then embeds itself in the wood of the porch. So basically it goes, thunk. Right? And they... the front guy doesn't even notice. He just keeps right on walking. And however, the back guy clearly sees the arrow come down. He stops, steps back, raises a shield that he has on his arm, and looks behind it, and he's looking to where it came from, and he's also moving behind one of the posts. You see him turn his head and open his mouth. Can't really make it out because of the distance, but you think he's probably yelling for his comrade, basically. And after a few seconds, the guy who had gone into the building steps back, standing in the doorway. Mm-hmm. Okay. Meanwhile, the guard who was at the door that was letting them go in draws his sword.
Like the bald guy who is,
yep,
who is at the front
the
door?
The bouncer, if you will. Okay. He draws his short sword.
So I'm not looking to be noticed right away. I'm just like looking to distract them.
So right.
I'm
so are you ducking down?
Duck
right? Yeah, so if you're down, in theory, there should be no way of them knowing which building the arrow came from.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you'll have to hold for a minute. The only other thing you could do, if you wanted to see how they're reacting and still stay out of view, is you could move over to the 6-foot section and look through one of the holes. Because there's from the street level, there should be no way that they can see through those holes.
I can do that.
Stay tuned for more Lomunian adventures.